It is just past 8:08 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards Teeger. We're going to pick up this with the developing story of what happened to Jamal Khashoggi. The Saudi government now confirming that he was killed, in their consulate. Their narrative has shifted from he walked out under his own power to he was killed by their agents, but after a fight broke out between him and 15 people working for the state of Saudi Arabia. This has not done anything to deter extremely strong criticism and calls for action coming from members of Congress. And the next advancement in the story seems to be what will happen tomorrow when Turkey releases the results of its own probe into the killing, which seems to be based on some form of surveillance inside the Saudi consulate. I thought this would be a good time to pull back the focus and kind of disentangle the regional and geopolitical interests that are behind the standoff over what happened to one journalist inside the consulate. We're joined now by Imad Harb. He is Director of Research and Analysis at the Arab Center in Washington, D.C. I believe we have him on Skype. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Hi, Brian.
Let's start with the latest Saudi account. It is both that Khashoggi was killed, that it was accidental, and that Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince and de facto ruler of the country, had nothing to do with it. Do you buy it?
No. Simply no, I do not buy it. There have been a lot of explanations that none of them actually makes any sense. These people in a centralized state like Saudi Arabia, and where decision-making is basically only in the royal court, for these people to go rogue and do whatever they want to do is simply not credible. And the stories that have surfaced since then make it really even less credible than anything. I mean, you know, the old adage says, you know, if you're in a hole, stop digging. Apparently, they're not going to stop digging.
Yeah. Most of the counter-narrative thus far has come from news articles that are citing anonymous Turkish intelligence sources, and we're going to see Turkish intelligence go on the record tomorrow, presumably,
right,
when they release the results of their probe. What are Turkey's interests in this? What is the Turkish-Saudi Arabian relationship like?
You know, Turkey has for a long, long time tried to really steer clear of antagonizing Saudi Arabia. They do not want to antagonize Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia is, you know, it's the religious center of the Islamic world. And also Saudi Arabia is the source of a whole lot of funding that can come to Turkey for investments. So they have avoided any problems with the Saudis, despite the fact that since last year, Turkey has been really on the hot seat regarding Saudi Arabia because of the Gulf crisis, the thing that's involving the state of Qatar. But at any rate, the Turks now are, to me, they are in a bind. I mean, do they tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth? Or do they just hide some things that they consider to be, to negatively affect their relations, further negatively affect their relations with Saudi Arabia? Tomorrow's announcement.
But I'm sorry, it seems like if Turkey wanted to do things by the book, they would have kept mum until they finished their investigation. The fact that there were multiple leaks from inside their intelligence, doesn't that suggest that Turkey saw some advantage in discrediting Saudi Arabia and doing it early?
Of course, there are advantages, and Turkey is going to exploit those advantages. The issue is, we also have to remember that, you know, Turkey is not only one person, is not only one institution. Each institution is trying to make itself be the one on the right side of history, so to speak. Tomorrow, the Turkish president, announces what the result of the investigations have revealed. But then again, is he really truly going to announce everything, to say everything? What has been leaked so far is rather detailed. I mean, these people have cameras everywhere. I mean, it appears like everybody is caught on camera doing something. So I am sure the Turks have a lot of facts, if not everything, but definitely a whole lot of facts that shed great light on this. But then again, really, we can't really discount the fact that Turkey may exploit this for its own messaging anyway. But in the end, truth has to come out. And in the end, Turkey is going to release that truth that really does not necessarily break relations with Saudi Arabia, but yet tells the truth at least partially.
I mean, both Turkey and Saudi Arabia are regional powers in the Middle East. Right. They both project force beyond their borders. If the United States Congress springs into action and announces some kind of sanctions against the Saudi government, does Turkey benefit from that?
Turkey, I think Turkey is trying to get an American angle from this whole thing. They got the American angle by releasing Mr. Brunson, and on that angle, they got President Trump to leave them alone for a little while. So, but if Congress actually really leaps into action and starts asking really probing questions of the Saudis and trying to pressure Saudi Arabia to release more information about this, Turkey is not going to be unhappy with that. Then it becomes, as far as Turkey is concerned, it's a U.S.-Saudi thing. We have nothing to do with it. But on the other hand, I think Turkey will egg Congress on, would like Congress to really do the job for it and try to push for release of information.
Let's talk about what's happening inside Saudi Arabia. So the person in the crosshairs here is the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He's the de facto ruler. The nominal ruler is his father, King Salman. Right. And the response so far has been to say Mohammed bin Salman was in the dark about what happened, and to further consolidate his power. His father has put him in charge of overhauling the intelligence agencies, because the Saudi narrative is they went rogue in this instance. I guess my question is kind of what is the practical consequence for the region of Mohammed bin Salman's already fairly consolidated power being further consolidated? What does he represent in terms of regional policy?
Well, for one thing, he is, like you say, he is the ruler of Saudi Arabia, the actual person who's making day-to-day decisions. I want to back up a little bit. You know, those people who are accused supposedly of doing this rogue operation, these are his people. These are his very, very people. So for him to restructure the intelligence agencies to bring better people there, I mean, these were his people. I mean, he's getting rid of his own people to get better people. I just don't get it. The issue is it's a very, very hard sell for them to sell this this way.
So you think it's a pure face saving maneuver? It's not about reorganizing the bureaucracy
at all. Mohammed bin Salman has a lot of influence, definitely regionally. He has a lot of influence, but there are a lot of things that he can do to just make himself a little more acceptable, not only to Saudis who are opposed to his policy, but also to the region, to the regional states that are really suffering from some decisions that he has taken. The Qatar issue of June of 2017, when Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Bahrain, together with Egypt, imposed a blockade, and they actually isolated Qatar from the rest of the world, supposedly because Qatar is not doing the right thing. The other thing is the war in Yemen. The war in Yemen is a devastating war that has killed, United Nations stopped counting, I think, like 2.5-3 years ago. And at that time, it was 10,000 people who had died in that war. And now, Yemen basically is on the verge of the greatest humanitarian disaster in the 21st century. 20 people are in danger of actually starving to death. And the country is under siege. It can't import anything, can't export anything, because Saudi warplanes are in the air all the time. So all these are decisions that Mohammed bin Salman himself took. So although he has a lot of friends in the area, He also has a lot of other people who are saying that he's not doing the right thing. So for the United States to not to interfere in this and try to put a stop to what this person is doing to Saudi Arabia and to U.S. relations and to Saudi Arabian relations with its neighbors, I think the Trump administration needs to get on and start doing the right thing.
So if he ordered the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, what do you think he thought he would get out of it? How would that work to his advantage?
Well, for one thing, he had Jamal Khashoggi is one, you know, may he rest in peace, is one in a series of a whole bunch of people who have been killed or have been disappeared in prisons or anywhere over the last, 10, 15 years. There has been, Mohammed bin Salman is not the first, and unfortunately he may not be the last, who really has this issue with absolute rulership and absolute control. What he gets out of it is he silences yet another voice that is supposedly that was telling the truth about what Mohammed bin Salman's projects for the kingdom, the future of the kingdom, rests upon what Mohammed bin Salman decides economically, politically, socially, militarily, whatever. Jamal Khashoggi was basically bringing the truth to the world about what it really means to have these projects. You know, nobody is criticizing Saudi Arabia for trying to diversify its economy. Nobody is criticizing Saudi Arabia for trying to assure its regional security and peace. The problem is, how are you doing this? Jamal Khashoggi died because he put some blame on Mohammed bin Salman for not doing the right thing by the country. What he gets out of it is, again, like I said, he silences yet another voice that is criticizing these really harebrained plans, whether economically, socially, or politically, that Mohammed bin Salman has been trying to carry on for the last few years.
Right, but up till this point, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, had very effectively gotten most of the Western media to frame him as little more than a liberal reformer inside Saudi Arabia and kind of erase everything else that you talked about, not to describe him as a tyrant consolidating power within Saudi Arabia, and certainly not to spend much time on the war he's prosecuting in Yemen. This seems to be like the first major public relations disaster for Mohammed bin Salman. Do you think he just thought killing a Washington Post journalist wouldn't draw this kind of attention?
I have a feeling that he simply did not think that will draw this much attention. As far as he is concerned, you have to also remember, this person has only come on the scene over the last 3 years, 3.5 years. He had no political experience as far as knowing what the world is about and all this. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a lot of hubris. It's he thinks that whatever he does is going to be bought by the international community, especially by Washington. And unfortunately, American journalists have really fallen for this thing about, he's a reformer, he let women drive. I mean, big deal. I mean, this is their right. Why would he? Why should they wait for somebody to let them drive? I mean, it's absurd. For American journalists, or actually some other Western journalists and European journalists who actually fell for this. That this is great. This is, he's reforming the society. He's reforming this. He's reforming that. A lot of people in the United States were surprisingly so sold on this agenda of liberalization. That they actually forgot that this person really doesn't know what he's doing, to tell it honestly. And now all the chickens have come home, and now we don't know what the future of Saudi Arabia is going to be like because of this man. So this is the thing, American journalists have been complicit. American journalists have covered up for a lot of the abuses that he and people like him and before him, you know, there are other people, you know, from the Philippines to Egypt to Pakistan to a whole bunch of other places that American journalists have somehow been sold on as these are the reformers, they're trying to change the old way and stuff like that. But yet again, these are people who are doing this in the service of their own personal interests, in the service of making themselves even more autocratic.
Walk me through the things that could potentially happen next. Let's take a worst-case scenario for Saudi Arabia, which is that the United States leads the charge on imposing sanctions. First of all, are the United States, the international community, capable of blocking Saudi oil exports?
Well, this is a huge thing. It's really a huge thing for the United States, for instance, to think about. You know, I heard in your little segment before the interview about you know, people are basically. I think was it Richard Durbin who asked for the ambassador to be recalled or something? And you know, it's very, very tough. This is a very extremely delicate kind of situation. Saudi Arabia is a major provider of the world energy and on a daily basis. And any problem with that is going to really hit the international economy very hard. Yet again, do we let Saudi Arabia do all that it's doing, whether it's the war in Yemen, whether it is the killing of free-minded journalists? Should we let that happen? I don't think that the United States or the world, for that matter, should let things like this happen, or should, you know, let Saudi Arabia go scot-free. But then again, you know, how do you impose certain kind of restrictions on Saudi behavior if you do not want to affect the international economy in that sense? You know, back in 1973, Saudi Arabia had, cut off all oil supplies. All the Arab countries have cut off oil supplies and caused an international bad situation. So, but now Saudi Arabia is not capable of doing that anyway. I mean, Saudi economy is way, way too dependent on the international economy to cut off supplies of oil and things like that. So I think the answer lies in Saudi Arabia itself. I think the pressure should be on Saudi Arabia itself to try to change domestically. And if possible, for the President Trump, to try to show the Saudi leadership that the United States is not going to stand for things like that, and definitely radical changes within the Saudi political system need to take place.
Right, but what would that mean? I mean, if the U.S. can't afford to block Saudi oil exports, and Saudi Arabia can't afford to shut off Saudi oil exports to retaliate against sanctions, like who has leverage and to do what?
This is the thing. This is, after all, I mean, this is Saudi sovereignty, right? We're not going to invade Saudi Arabia to impose a certain regime on it. But yet, at the same time, there are subtle ways of making your message heard. We could at least, first of all, I mean, appoint an ambassador in Riyadh to try to get our message there. I think King Salman himself can be approached to try to limit the powers of Mohammed bin Salman, what's in his hand so far. I don't think that the king is actually cognizant of all the things that Mohammed bin Salman has been doing, or has, you know, the calamities that he has really caused inside the kingdom or in the region. So I think the Trump administration has a responsibility to try to go to Riyadh and try to show the king what is happening. This is why tomorrow's announcement by the Turks, who knows, maybe it will bring some added pressure. It will give the world community, or even King Salman himself, something to go with. At the same time, we also have to remember that this is always, it has always been. Saudi Arabia did not want anybody to interfere in its domestic affairs. And these are the affairs not only of Saudi Arabia, these are the affairs of the royal family, the Saudi royal family itself. So It's a very extremely complicated issue, but the United States and the international community cannot just leave it at that. There has to be some.
I guess I don't understand why diplomatic persuasion would change anything absent actual leverage, a threat of action that would have adverse consequences for the Saudi regime.
There's always the action of a threat of cutting off military aid. You can always threaten to cut off military aid. Senator Bernie Sanders and a whole bunch of people with him, both Republicans and Democrats, are calling for at least a halt in American weapons deliveries regarding the war in Yemen. So this can send a very, very big message. Question is, will the American military be ready to do something like this? Will it be happy to do something like this? We know that Secretary Mattis is not on board. He wants to continue the relationship with Saudi Arabia and all that. But yet again, how much is the United States? How much is the United States system, whether it's military, political, Congress, or Canada? How much can they keep taking from these transgressions regarding the war in Yemen? I think this is a very good step as far as I'm concerned. Maybe that can get a message across.
All right. Ahmad Harb, we'll have to leave it there because that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you.
Ahmad Harb is Director of Research and Analysis at the Arab Center in Washington, D.C.